Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to make some money. My job is not just to entertain you, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Can human ingenuity triumph over inflation fast enough to keep interest rates low and the stock market humming? After a day where the Dow advanced 16 points, S&P gained 0.18%, NASDAQ inched up only 0.06%, although all were up much more during the day. That is the central question in this market. See, we've got a serious supply chain snag that's pushing up prices all over the place, and incredibly strong demand fueled by a government still anxious to put money in people's pockets. But if the free market can correct itself, and it is the free market, then I think productivity increases will be able to trump price increases, which will allow the Federal Reserve to keep holding interest rates low and allow stocks to go higher. Right now, we're seeing this debate play out among some of the most powerful people in the world. Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Square and Twitter, which, by the way, reported a better-than-expected quarter this very evening, believes that we're in an inexorable path to hyperinflation, where dollars become worthless while other storeholds of wealth retain their value. In his case, he thinks crypto will do it. Whenever you hear people using the term hyperinflation, by the way, unless they're talking about Weimar Germany or Zimbabwe or Argentina, what they really mean is high inflation. Hyperinflation is hyperbole. And it's high inflation. That's what they're really worried about. That we'll get high inflation and the Fed will have to obliterate the economy in order to get prices under control, a la 1980 to 1982 in this country. At the same time, you've got another camp that's really polar opposite. That's personified by Cathie Wood. She's that visionary fund manager who was Tesla's biggest backer for years as it grew from a tiny struggling automaker into a trillion-dollar enterprise. Rather than inflation, Wood believes we're headed for deflation because of a huge inventory buildup as well as the power of technology to keep a lid on prices. She's very wary. The last time she thought inflation would take off, and she was wrong. I like your humility there. To me, this whole debate is just too ethereal, with both extremes being, well, too extreme. I think it's a mistake to focus on those big macro numbers. Instead, I want to wrestle with the inflation versus deflation debate by looking at what's happening with individual companies and their stocks, which is much more concrete and, more important, can help make you a lot of money. Today, some huge companies reported, and they made me feel less confident in Cathie Wood's vision of a deflationary future because so many of them told us that rising raw costs are putting pressure on their ability to make money. I've always rooted, for instance, for 3M. It's a great company that my father used to rep in Philadelphia selling Scotch tape and Sachin, dating me. It's a dividend aristocrat, great track record of innovation. Historically, they've made a ton of money from their new products. 3M is still following the same game plan, but high raw costs are muting their gains. So the stock trades roughly unchanged, despite strong organic growth that had driven the stock up big in the morning before its conference call. General Electric, on the other hand, was able to overcome both higher costs and port congestion, delivered an excellent set of numbers. The stock rallied nicely. But when you look under the hood, there were some disappointments. Take windmills. There aren't enough orders. And in the meantime, the steel they need to make this stuff just keeps getting ever more expensive. Bad for GE. Very good for steelmakers like Nucor, which we own for the Charitable Trust. Still, the vast majority of GE's business lines look good to me, especially aerospace service, although healthcare is very good. And there was a mosaic of strength all about the quarter. After listening to the conference call, I'm convinced that Nucor will have a good year in 2022, though. Something that's not baked into the stock here. I think it's still buy at 111, down from $128 in the summer because prices will be up again next year. The analysts aren't looking for that. Unfortunately, some other industrials put up terrific numbers and meant nothing to their stocks because, again, Wall Street's so worried about rising costs. Think Raytheon Technology, the defense and aerospace by Otis, the elevator company, both of which were created by the United Technologies breakup. I think there's some real stupidity going on here. Otis got hit because they do business in China, and people are worried that the Chinese residential real estate market is on the verge of collapse. Thanks, yes, of course, to the Evergrande fiasco. However, Chinese property companies only account for 3% of Otis's book of business. In the U.S., every line of business was on fire, including, get this, Center City offices. That caught me by surprise. I think Otis and Raytheon can bounce back if Wall Street starts to believe that we can get inflation under control. Look at those stocks to be up next week at this time. Now, this inflation versus deflation debate plays out all over the place, every single sector. Take United Parcel and Eli Lilly, two more charitable trust names, both of which reported incredible numbers that, to me, tell a story of deflation. UPS has managed to keep costs down while its volume expands, especially among small and medium-sized businesses, where the real growth in this country is. If you remember, CEO Carol Tomei came on the show after the last quarter, and the stock was pummeled, and she promised that there'd be good numbers coming up. People didn't believe her. I think United Parcel's gains came down to higher productivity, which helps keep costs lower. There were tons of short sellers here betting that UPS would lay an egg, just like FedEx did. Nope. Tomei delivered and put FedEx to shame. The cash flow, the dividend, all incredibly strong. With big gains like this, you tend to have, by the way, a second day run, so I wouldn't take profits just yet. All right, how about the controversial Eli Lilly? It was up big. One point it was down six, and it finished up nice 3 points. Most people don't think about this one as an inflation or deflation story. That's wrong. Why? Because Lilly's working on a drug that's the best hope for rolling back Alzheimer's, a disease that costs the system fortunes, a horrible disease. Lilly could change that. I do a lot of work with the American Migraine Foundation because I'm a pretty bad sufferer of it, and that gets me involved with a slew of brain doctors. Count me a believer. I was shocked that the stock didn't really take off here, especially given some added good news about a new diabetes formulation. If the FDA gives this drug's fast-track approval, the stock can be radically undervalued. The doctors I work with about brains are very excited about what Lilly's drug does against Alzheimer's. Take them seriously, even if Wall Street doesn't. But then there's oil. If we're going to tame inflation, the real this rise in oil needs to be stopped. More on that later. The oil rally is the one visible force that could make the Fed tighten if it continues, along with the inflation, housing, commodities, and, of course, labor. Of course, the housing market can cool on its own. That's what always happens when it gets too expensive. Commodities can go into glut as high prices spur companies to boost production. That's something that Kathy Wood talked about in some of her tweets. Labor, intractable until we finally beat COVID. After the close, though, we got some good news from tech. Microsoft shot the lights out, massively accelerating growth in their Azure cloud business, up nearly 50%. That's extraordinary. That's year over year. Constant currency. Fine numbers from AMD. Some say it knocked out of the park. High-performance chips for the distancing itself from one-time king, Intel. Twitter's rallying in after hours, even though the numbers weren't exactly perfect. It was better than feared. A lot of concern about companies that depend on online advertising in the face of all these new privacy enhancements doesn't seem to be hurting Twitter. The one disappointment actually surprised me. And that was Alphabet, where the cloud business came in a little weaker than expected, and YouTube took a hit. I hope it's not a turkey. I'm not fretting. Expectations got too high. That's often the story until a new climb begins. We've seen this movie before. However, when you put it all together, tech had a terrific night, and these are all companies that help facilitate deflation because their products help replace expensive human labor with cheaper hardware and software. That's good news for the Kathy Wood contingent. Here's the bottom line. When it comes to the great inflation debate that rages every day, I think the jury's still out based on what we're hearing from actual companies. Going forward, we need more stories like UPS and fewer stories, sadly, like 3M. By the end of this brutal week, I bet you we'll know the score. Let's go to Lenny in Virginia. Lenny.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Lenny. What's going on?
I have a few comments and a question about Gap, ticker symbol GPS. Mm-hmm. Gap reported excellent second quarter results in August, beating revenue and earnings estimate. Raised guidance for the remainder of the fiscal year and has a Yeezy Gap collaboration sellouts with potential halo effect on overall sales. It was also noted on the Q2 conference call that any supply chain concerns are factored into their raised guidance, yet the stock is down about 60% from the 52-week high. Is this a good opportunity to buy Gap?
You know what? I'm going to say yes. I am actually quite surprised that Gap's down here. And, you know, look, the Chapel Trust owns American Eagle Outfitters. That's another one. I mean, these are doing well. Are they doing unbelievably well like a Costco? No. But I think you're buying Gap at a very good price. And I like your analysis. And I think, Lenny, you're doing high-quality work. Let's go to Phil in New Jersey. Phil.
Hey, booyah, Dr. Kramer. How are you?
I am good. How about you?
Good. Just a little, upset with the Eagles trade they did with our backup quarterback, Joe Flacco. But I think they should have traded the coach rather than the quarterback. But needless to say, hey, it was always next season. But my question for you is pertaining to BlackRock. So I bought BlackRock prior to its earnings.
Okay.
With 100 points under this. And I know, you know, it's had a nice run from earnings, and I'm just trying to figure out, is this a good stock for me
this
to hold on?
This is the Cardinals.
Should I just keep it the
listen to me, Phil. I'm going to vote for you, too, I think, next Tuesday. This team is the Cardinals, okay? They don't have any losses. It's really incredible. They've got great receivers. And, by the way, they just got a good tight end in Zach Ertz. You want to stay long BlackRock, and you want to buy some if anybody's looking for a good idea. How about Ann in Indiana? Ann!
Jim, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Now we've seen Snap and Facebook report. So is Apple's privacy policy, we've seen how that's affecting their ad targeting. Is this a red flag or an opportunity to buy Snap at a discount?
I think Snap is overly discounted. It's problems. I think that Twitter showed you tonight that not all is bad. Look, there's no doubt about it. Apple is on a warpath for its own customers. We don't really want to be tracked. That's what Apple's doing. I bet you the next iteration's even more positive for Apple and less positive for the online. Snap has come down a lot, though. I think maybe people panic. Now, I think the jury is still out on this great inflation debate that we actually have very visibly between Jack Dorsey and Kathy Wood. Going forward, we need to see more stories about deflation, fewer stories about rising raw costs. On Mad Tonight, Logitech reported last night with a better-than-feared result. So could this quarter be the push that the stock needs to break out? I'm going to talk to the CEO. And oil is continuing to boil higher. But could the rally be running out of steam and nearing a top? I don't know anybody's thinking that. And Centene reported a top and bottom line beat for the third quarter, which sent the stock soaring today. I'm breaking down the report with the CEO to see if this is the beginning of a big move. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact. Smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here's a good question. How long will Logitech International be stuck in this penalty box? This maker of computer accessories, consumer electronics, and gaming equipment had a huge year in 2020 as one of the biggest beneficiaries of the stay-at-home economy. But that means they're up against some insanely tough comparisons in 2021. And you know how much Wall Street hates that. Logitech stock, get this, has tumbled from 140 at its peaks this summer down to the mid-80s. That includes a nasty 5.7% decline today after the company reported its most recent quarter last night. Well, the actual results were better than feared. Modest beats for both revenue and earnings. Management declined to raise their full-year forecast. Investors headed for the hills. I didn't like the inventory number either, but we got to learn more about this. It doesn't help that they're getting hit with supply chain woes like everybody else. At this point, Logitech's now selling for just 19 times earnings, even though the company continues to grow, even in the face of difficult comparisons. And they keep taking market share in most of their important categories. So could this be a buying opportunity? Let's check in with Bracken Darrell. He's the president and CEO of Logitech International. Get a better read on the quarter and where his company's headed. Mr. Darrell, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you so much. Great to be here, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Well, Bracken, I have to tell you, when I saw the numbers, I said, okay, enough is enough. These are good numbers. They're better than feared. Gaming is terrific. The market's obviously a very, very tough market. But can you explain to people which of your positives are secular growers that are going to be with us? Because I think you've got a lot of secular growth ahead of you.
You know, I feel a little like the kid in the candy store. I mean, almost all of our business is in the secular growth box, which is, you know, we're in there for video collaboration. It's all going to all collaboration is going to move to video. We're in there for workspaces. You know, people are going to have multiple workspaces because now they're working hybrid. We're in here for gaming, which you and I have talked about so many times. It's going to be the biggest collection of sports in the world for participants and spectators. And we're in there for streaming and creating, where everybody's watching everybody else stream and create. More and more hours are being spent on it. So we're in a really, really good position long term from a secular growth standpoint.
All right. Well, let's just pick at some of these to be sure that we know what some of these sellers might be thinking about. How about video collaboration? A miss, and yet video seems very, very hot. Could people be looking at that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I think we're negative versus a year ago on video collaboration, and that seems kind of alarming. But you have to realize we more than doubled last year this time, so we really had strong growth. And, you know, and I think, you know, an underlying sellout was up 22%. So it was a strong growth. We did bring our channel inventories down this quarter. You know, last year we sold kind of ahead we sold in ahead of sellout all year long as we were building inventory. This year we're bringing it down as we're starting to promote some. But overall, we feel really good about the momentum that's happening in video collaboration.
Some people focus on the incrementally negative cash flow commentary. Could that be it?
Could be. You know, we generally say, you know, our cash flow will look a lot like our non-GAAP earnings. And this year we said, well, it's not going to be quite that, maybe 70% of that. And the reason for that is that we're putting more into inventory. You know, the reason we're putting more into inventory is a couple of things. One is we've made some strategic bets on inventory to make sure we've got product to sell. You know, this is a tough environment to make sure you can supply products at regular rates. And the second reason is this big logistics slowdown, which I'm sure a lot of people on your show have talked about. You know, that has basically kept product in kind of the air freight camp more than usual. And by the way, that's also going to result in a little bit of impact on our margins. And I think that might have alarmed people a little bit, although our margins are really strong relative to our goals. But we said, you know, we're going to have some impact on our margins going forward. Because there's two things you can have, predictability or cost. And in this case, you know, for us to have predictability in this logistics environment, we're going to have to air freight more, especially in the holidays. So that'll affect our gross margins a little bit.
Right, because Bracken, I give your stuff for the holidays. I find your stuff to be what everybody wants. I mean, honestly, that's what the kids want. My kids are gamers. Are you going to have everything we need?
You know, I think we're not immune to the supply chain challenges that everybody else has, but you know, we just gained a ton of share in gaming. You know, we're up 6 points in market share in gaming. We just hit, and we're the market share leader there. We're going to have a lot of things to buy there. That's a big holiday thing. We're going to have a lot of streaming creating products to buy, and we'll have a lot of mice and keyboards. So yeah. I think we'll have plenty for you to buy, Jim.
Okay. Now, what's been left out of all of this, and I'm really focused on, is the need to have your kind of equipment when I go into the metaverse. The universe that is the metaverse requires Logitech. And how ready are you for the metaverse?
You know, I think, you know, as I said to start off the show, you know, I really love our positioning. And I think our positioning is a metaverse positioning, you know, which is, you know, you're just going to be always on in almost everything you're doing. And, you know, whether you're working personally or you're going into the office, you can imagine going to the office now and not having video in a room. Yeah, you know, when you know that a lot of people aren't going to be in that office, they're going to be somewhere else. Can you imagine doing audio calls after all this? So, yeah, the metaverse is really what we're set up for.
Now, just the gaming has no slowdown. I thought that gaming was something we did during a pandemic when we're locked inside.
Well, you know, last year, you know, during the pandemic, you know, the League of Legends final surpassed the Super Bowl in live viewership, over 110 million views. And it's going nowhere but up. You know, I don't think this is just a temporary, certainly isn't a temporary trend that peaked during the pandemic. This is a very long-term trend. It'll be the biggest collection of sports in the world, bigger than anything I can think of. And we're kind of in the early innings here.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm just surprised. Honest, I think if everybody were 30, your stock would be up 30%. 30 or under. See, because a lot of people don't understand these games. They don't understand how compelling they are. And they all think that it's just a question of being locked inside. It's what people do for entertainment. And I think Logitech's set up for it. I think your stock's down enough. You have tons of cash. You can do whatever you want.
I'm super excited about where we are. You know, I love to be the underdog. It's my favorite thing in the world. So it's taken us a while to get here. So I love this positioning, Jim. Stay tuned.
I like that. You're the dog. And you'll be in the hunt. That's Bracken Darrell, CEO of Logitech. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate it.
All right. You heard him. He's the underdog. And Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, extra, extra. Read oil about it. Kramer goes high energy with an off-the-charts look at the market's bubbling crude. Next.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, as I said at the top, the biggest worry in this market is inflation. And the most important component of inflation is skyrocketing energy prices, with oil breaking out over $84 today. But what if oil peaks? That'd be a huge positive for both the economy and 90% of the companies, the S&P 500, that benefit from cheaper fuel. I know there's a widespread sense that inflation will continue endlessly. The oil move is unstoppable. Lots of people talking about $100 oil. However, some of the smartest people I know are already seeing signs that crude could be nearing a top. They think this oil rally could be on its last legs. Why? You know what we're going to do? We're going to go off the charts with the help of Larry Williams. He's that legendary technician I like so much, market historian, who's been trading stocks, futures, and commodities since before I had puberty. Larry's written more than a dozen books, created tons of his own proprietary indicators, some will hear tonight, but I keep coming back to his work because he's got a stunning track record since the pandemic got rolling last year. That includes the boldest contrarian call I've ever seen when he called the bottom last spring when most experts were still running from the hills. I bring this up because right now Williams has another bold contrarian call, and you better focus on this because he's looking for a top in crude oil. Why? Remember, his methodology is all about looking at the historical data and drawing inferences from what's worked in the past. He's empirical, not ethereal. Take a look at this chart of oil from 2012 through 2014, during the heyday of high prices. This picture shows you one way to spot when a top is coming. Okay, down at the bottom, there are two very important lines. The black line shows you open interest in the oil futures, okay, right here. That's the total number of outstanding futures contracts. And the red line shows you the net long or short positions of commercial hedgers. Every week we get commitments of traders data from the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, right? And they show you what small speculators, larger speculators, and commercial hedgers are doing with their oil futures, as Carly Garner has often explained to us. Williams believes, I think correctly, that the commercials have the best understanding of the energy markets. These are the people who are actually involved in the industry day to day. They're not gambling. So Williams likes to look at the relationship between what the commercials are doing and the broader oil futures market. When open interest rises, it means there are more contracts being open. But you need to know who's the driving force behind those contracts. In a situation where open interest is rising, but the commercial hedgers are lightening up on their positions, well, that tells you that tells Williams that the new buyers are probably weak hands. In other words, when the black line, okay, goes up while the red line's going down, That's usually a sign that oil's about to peak. Sure enough, we saw this exact pattern happen four times in 2012 through 2014, which he thinks is the analogous period. I tend to agree with him. Now let's look at the same data, but for 2021. Look at this. It's the same pattern, the exact same pattern. Commercial hedgers, okay, net red, they are unloading the oil futures while hedge funds and home gamers have been buying. So you see the red going down, we have that, and the others are buying. This is precisely what we get before we hit a peak. Before, remember, we're trying to think about what's going to happen in the future, not now. Next, I want you to look at another one. This is the Williams-Kotze, which is the indicator Larry put together to measure institutional buying and selling. This is a leading indicator, and it's now dipped into sell territory. That is a very, very strong negative. The Williams-Kotze has been right far more often than it's been wrong, and we're in a bad situation right there. He's come up with other indicators, too. I want you to check out this time period with his Will-Val valuation tool, which tells you when a commodity has gotten overbought or oversold. Right now, it's an extreme overbought territory, meaning it's come up too far too fast. For Williams, when this indicator goes above the red line, which is right here, well, that's when you need to start looking for sell signals. It's been a pretty accurate forecaster. Meanwhile, when it comes to the seasonal pattern in oil, the trend is not your friend at this time of year. Now, take a look. Typically, Williams points out that the second half of the year tends to be rough for oil. In a normal year, we get a seasonal peak sometime in July. This year, though, oil has been able to buck the seasonal pattern, with the price of crude roaring at a time when it usually goes lower. Going forward, Williams expects the seasonal pattern to reassert itself, as oil typically tends to go down through the end of the year. So far, it's been an anomaly, okay? But he's thinking it's going to go back to trend line. What about non-seasonal patterns? Take a look at this chart, which shows the price of crude versus a forecast based on the dollar index, which is in red. Since oil is priced in dollars, they tend to have a pretty strong negative correlation. When the dollar gets strong, oil typically gets weaker. It doesn't take, you can buy a lot more oil with the same amount of dollars. According to Williams, the dollar index typically leads crude by about 33 weeks. And if you go based on that correlation, it's also forecasting a decline in oil. This is the 33rd week. This is going to change direction because this is going down. Okay, the red's the lead. Meanwhile, looking at the action oil, Williams has also spotted a 57-day cycle. He finds that the price of crude round trips from peak to trough every 57 days, more or less. Right now, this 57-day cycle is also calling for a top right here. It's a lot of evidence, isn't it? So when it comes to the price of crude, the commercial hedgers are unloading their positions while speculation keeps ramping up. And according to Williams' various proprietary indicators, oil's gotten overbought, and pretty much every pattern he can come up with suggests that we're getting close to a peak. But, and this is a very big but, technicians also care about the trend. And right now you can see that oil's still trending higher. So when might that trend change? Take a look. The red line on this chart shows you when a trend is likely to change. As long as this line is underneath the price of oil, okay, right here, once it's underneath the price of oil, well, then it's bullish, and all the other charts may not be right. Williams wants to see the red line break out above the lowest low from the past 4 or 5 days, and we just aren't quite there yet, so he needs to see this go up, this go down, and then it's over. The bottom line, though. The charts as interpreted by Larry Williams suggest that oil could have a lot of things going against it in the very near future. He ain't looking for $100 a barrel. If it's not quite ready to peak in the next couple of days, well, let's see. But going forward, he thinks you need to be a lot more cautious about what has become the easiest trade in the book, the one that says crude will continue to rise. Joe in Florida. Joe.
Hi, Jim. My son said I had to do the obligatory booyah.
Thank you. What's going on?
Jim, you've been high on the energy stocks lately, Chevron and others.
Right, Chevron. I like Chevron. I like Pioneer. I like Diamondback, and I like Devon. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I heard you mention BP, British Petroleum, which I own.
Well, BP is good. I mean, you know, look, the trend's your friend here. I mean, oil is going higher. If oil goes down, then I think you'll find that you should have trimmed some BP. I'm actually in the mode of getting rid of some BP if it trades over 30. Let's go to Jack in New Jersey. Jack.
Hey, what's up, Kramer? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Pretty good. Kramer, I own some Exxon, right? And I can't figure out why no one is talking about Guyana and Exxon's 19th mega oil find there. They're up to like 9 billion barrels of oil. So why is no one talking about this? And when do you think we're going to see this in the numbers? And then another thing also, being that Saudi Aramco is like six times bigger than Exxon now, do you see them possibly merging with a Chevron?
No, they won't merge. And the reason why Exxon is not stock isn't trading higher is that Chevron's a faster grower. And people feel a lot safer in Chevron, particularly with that board change at Exxon, where we don't really know what's going to happen at that company. Let's go to Judah in Maryland, please. Judah.
Booyah to you, Jim. How's it going?
Doing well. How about you, Judah?
Mr. Marks.
Doing well. What's up?
Today I'm calling about EOG. I bought 200 shares at $85 a month ago, and today it costs $95. Do you think I should buy more?
No, I don't want you to buy more. Although I like EOG, it's a very well-run company. It's got a lot of crude, which is what you want here. But I don't think you should buy more. And I think that if the stock trades over 100, I think you probably want to go in the other direction. All right, the charts as interpreted by the legendary technician Larry Williams suggest that the oil rally could be on its last legs, very contrary to what almost everybody feels. It may not be quite ready to peak just yet. It's got to go down below this and that up. But the chartist thinks you need to get a lot more cautious about crude going forward, which influenced my thinking about the last two quarters, about EOG and BP. I think that makes sense. Much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusive with Centene. How is the managed care company poised to prosper as we emerge from the pandemic? I'm talking to the CEO, fresh off the company's earnings report, which looked darn good. And Facebook has its fair share of critics. But there's one new piece of the puzzle that is yet to be criticized and could be a big opportunity for the company. Maybe its biggest ever. I'll share what it is. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. Over the last couple of weeks, all sorts of stocks have exploded higher. And while you hear a lot about high-growth tech names, you know, Tesla, Cloudflare, you know, the usuals, we've also seen some big gains in more slow and steady, inexpensive stocks. Take Cramer Faith Centene. That's the managed care company that specializes in administering government-sponsored health plans. In less than 2 weeks, the stock has jumped nearly 15%, including, get this, a 4.4% gain today after the company reported a really terrific quarter this morning. Centene delivered a nice top and bottom line beat with costs under control. Revenue guidance was solid. Plus, Centene stock had gotten pretty cheap. It's now roughly 14 times earnings, so the buyers were easy to please. Does that mean it's time to take profits, or could this be the beginning of a larger move now that the stock's broken out above $70? Let's take a closer look with Michael Neidorff, the straight shooting chairman and CEO of Centene, to learn more about the quarter and what he sees going forward. Mr. Neidorff, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great to be here, Jim. How are you?
Okay, Michael, the last time you were on, you talked about the idea that maybe the acquisitions are you can slow down, don't need them, and you're going to start reaping the cash. Well, your operating cash flow of $1.8 billion was nearly double the consensus. Is this the beginning of when we can expect a giant return back to shareholders because of all the good buys that you made and now the rationalization of them?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've said all along that we need critical mass in this business. Our acquisition is what we did to get to, you know, $1.25 billion, $125 billion company. Now it's time to start to leverage it. The cash flow this time, there was some one-time issues where pass-through monies and things of that nature. The cash flow is strong. The matrix is strong. It was a clean quarter. It's where we want to get to. It's the beginning of the value recognition that's in this company.
You know, you often talk about technology and how you have the edge. And it was so great in the conference call. You actually talked about, you know, you gave an example of AI and what it means to keep costs down. AI takes a nurse going through a chart versus AI. I think if you told our viewers this, they would really understand why technology is keeping the cost of healthcare at Centene down.
Good. One of the example I used was it takes a nurse on average 18 minutes to go through a chart to pre-authorize things. We have used it. We're using AI. We are able to do that same process with the algorithms we've developed in 1 second. Faster than the doctor can type in the request, we can say yes. And we're saying about 67 to about two-thirds of all requests are approved. Those that are not approved, we have a person look at, so we don't depend just on AI. But it's just putting the nurses to work in things they like to do instead of the monotonous chart reviews.
Well, I thought that was incredible. I'm sure there are many, many other examples. But what it certainly clears is that the idea that you can't make money serving the, let's call them, Let's call them underclass. Okay, I want to call it because you and I both know that we've done well in life. There's a huge percentage of people in this country who have not been able to have the advantages and not have the opportunities, but and they deserve good health care. It is very clear that Centene is delivering that health care to them. You should be proud of that. But you have to be able to use every single means to keep these prices low for people. How are you able to do it in scale?
Well, I think that's, you know, using systems and the technology we have is so important. But it all starts with quality. We say, except for the grace of the Lord, any of us could be receiving our care this way, and we'd expect the highest quality with dignity and respect. Also, we recognize the highest quality is the least expensive. You do it the first time, do it the right way. We're dealing with the most vulnerable populations. And, you know, we need workers in this day and age, and they have to be healthy. So it all starts there. And we know it.
You know, another thing you did, there's so much wishy-washy. I speak to all these CEOs. They're so wishy-washy about the vaccine mandate. Some of them say, well, listen, the government's making me do this. But a lot of people are uncomfortable. We don't. I mean, it's a public health issue, for heaven's sake. And you make it very clear. This is not a political issue. It's a public health issue.
You know, I was fortunate to hear on many occasions the King of Jordan speak, who's the most respected person in the Middle East. He said once, I get up every morning and say, I'm going to do the right thing. And the right thing here is to protect those that can't be immunized, to protect the young children who can't be immunized. And the only way we're going to get through this thing is to have everybody vaccinated. And that's what we're doing. We're saying it's absolutely everyone that can be vaccinated should be. And you know, we're in healthcare, and it starts here. And if we're not going to do it, who is?
Are we through the vast majority of this terrible pandemic?
I'm worried.
Oh,
you know,
no.
We still have a lot of people who have not been vaccinated, which creates a host for the next variant. And the epidemiologists I work with say if it continues, they're going to get worse, and the vaccines we have now may not work on them. So you know, I pray that we're through it, and I hope we are. But the only way I know we're going to really defeat it is to get everybody vaccinated. They can be vaccinated. That's the best way to assure ourselves that we get through it.
Wow. Okay, well, look, I'm going to leave it at that because I think you're so right. And look, I don't think this is a religious issue. It's not a secular versus it's not an underclass. It's not a red. It's a blue. It's about saving lives and getting on with things. And you make it very clear. And you're a great spokesman for the health business.
Jim, I just want to just add, you know, let's listen to the scientists. This is the safest vaccine we've ever developed.
Yeah, very much so. And yeah, safer than that darn mumps thing that I took. Safer than the polio shot that I took, a little while ago. Anyway, Michael, thank you so much for coming on Mad Money. Great to see you. That's Michael Miller. He's the CEO of Centene CNC. You know, I've been waiting for the earnings breakout. We just had it. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, a storm is coming. So give us a call. Kramer's got the answers to all your burning questions. The Lightning Round is next.
It is time. It's time for the Lightning Round. And then the Lightning Round is over. Are you ready? Scheme day. Time for the Lightning Round. It's over. Tony in Florida. Tony.
Hey, Jim. Get a big booyah from South Florida.
Wow.
You
wish I were there. What's up?
Not much. I want to thank you for your new show that you have, or the new thing to help us out with
the investment club. Thank you. We're really pouring. We're trying so hard to do a good job for you. I really appreciate it. How can I help?
And another thing I want to thank you is that most people want to make money off of something. You just want to teach us, and I really appreciate that.
I said that when I was in Mexico City the other day. I said my whole goal is to teach. I got a huge classroom here. I want to do well for everybody. Let me do well for you. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I have this stock that I bought after earnings because it missed it a little bit, and I'm a dog lover. I have dogs. My daughter has dogs, and we both use Chewy, and I bought it all the way down to 62, and now it's coming back up. I don't know if I should reinvest
more
into
it. Look, we're in the same boat. We use it, too, particularly for toys. Stock's down 24% for the year because it's high-flying growth stock. I like it. I think you should buy more. I think it's in good shape. Let's go to Jared in Washington. Jared.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
I want your take on a digital consultancy called Perficient, ticker PRFT.
Yeah, that's a very red hot business analytics company. We have too many of these. While Proficient may be proficient, I have to stick with Salesforce because that's lean and mean and been around for a long time. I know you need to go to Ithacar in Florida. Ithacar.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
Oh, it's so good. Good to talk to you, Jim. I need your opinion on the Berkshire Hathaway B. I bought 10 shares about a couple of years ago.
And you are never going to go wrong buying the shares of Berkshire Hathaway, even after whatever happens to Mr. Buffett, because he's got a great team. Huge cash flow, a lot of great brands. I want you to stay long that stock. Karen in Virginia. Karen.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I need some guidance.
All right.
I need some guidance on TMC. Mm. After I bought it, it tanked.
Yeah,
and I need to know if I should get out
Canadian,
all the way.
Canadian battery company. I don't have much surety that that's going to be the winner. I just don't think it. Remember, there's not enough room for all these companies. We're starting to see companies getting shaken out. I don't want to be in with that company. Let's go to Dave in Florida. Dave.
Jim, how you doing? Happy day.
No, listen,
I'm calling
you
about LEV. Lion Electric.
We like Lion Electric. This is another zero-emission vehicle. Now, again, we're seeing the shakeout. And the shakeout says be careful with these names. You have to be careful with Fisker, even, which either guy's doing a good job. So we're going to hold back. It's everybody wants in Tesla, and it's taking all the money away from the group. Let's go to Greg in Georgia. Greg.
Hey, Jim. I'm calling about a growth fintech company spun out of Aaron's last year. They crushed earnings in Q1 and Q2. They're partnered with Best Buy, Lowe's, Big Cat Jewelers, and others, and they recently acquired a small buy now, pay later firm. Analysts have a $6 price target, but we're stuck in the low 40s. I'm talking about Prog Holdings, PRG.
I don't know Prog Holdings. Miss, there's a lot of new companies, aren't there? I do not know Prog Holdings. I am sorry. I need to know more. Let's go to Matt in Alabama. Matt.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
Hey, I got a question about Microvast. With Oshkosh being a pipe investor and the UPS, the Postal Service contract going electric, are we buying or selling?
No. We're not buying any of these lithium battery companies. There's too many of them, and they're all going down. And while they may have a move back up, it is going to be an opportunity to lighten up, not be bigger. Let's go to Joe in North Carolina, please. Joe.
Yes.
Go ahead, Joe. You're up.
Hi. All right. I was calling about Jazz Pharmaceuticals. They bought GWPH and just
wondered
what you thought
about it. Yeah, I'm going to be unmitigated and tell you should buy this. They bought GWPH, and that is going to be still the only cannabis company that is going to get the medical recognition. And by the way, I don't see the federal government legalizing cannabis like everybody said they would. I like Jazz Pharma. That was a good move, and they didn't overpay. Jared in North Carolina. Jared.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Calling about a cloud software company out of Wilmington, North Carolina. Quick shout out to all my people in Wrightsville Beach down there.
Okay.
They're a fintech space, and they're pushing their digital banking platform. So I want to get your take on a company called Encino.
Encino is a winner. You know, we had Upstart. We nailed Upstart below us 100. Now, this one is not taking off the way I wanted to, what I expected. I want you to buy Encino. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
You do not need me to spell out all the reasons why Facebook is getting hammered here. Fairly or unfairly, the company's getting blame-faced left and right. Instead, I want to talk about something positive they've got going on, assuming Mark Zuckerberg can deliver the metaverse. Now, this is an amorphous concept. We don't really know what the metaverse will look like, except lots of tech CEOs keep telling us about this concept. It sounds a little something like out of the Matrix, right? What we do know is that this Thursday, Facebook's holding its Connect Universe event, where Zuckerberg will show us what his version of the metaverse might look like. And I bet you it knocks our socks off. Judging by the amount of money he's spending, I'm betting his vision wins out over others. So what do we need to hear on Thursday? First, before he gets into the metaverse stuff, I wanted to talk about safety. Facebook needs to reassure us that they're getting more proactive about preventing people from using the platform to incite hate, violence, or even genocide, something that actually happened in Burma. I don't know how they can make the platform safe, we're safer. But until we see a big push here, I know it's going to be tough to own. Even if my charitable trust holds on to a piece of it, 120 shares bought at $64.50, stocks at $315, playing with the house's money. After that, though, what I care about is the new and glorious world of the metaverse itself, which I think can be the biggest force in tech for the next decade. I am not kidding. This is a concept I first heard about from the legendary Jensen Huang. He is the Renaissance Man CEO of NVIDIA, which makes the chips that would power the metaverse, regardless of what it ends up looking like. Jensen told me a story about interactive virtual reality that sounded truly enticing. How you'll be able to get together with your favorite artists or writers or performers, past, present, future, Beethoven, Brahms, Bach, in a kind of virtual room. It's not that much of a leap to imagine that not you, but your avatar could play basketball with LeBron or, yes, Kobe, some sort of wild NBA 2K living in the seas game. I like to play Rummy Cube with my wife. Sure, I can play with it online, but it's static. I want to be in the room because she plays a mean game, opening and crushing me. I want to beat her in person. With the metaverse, you can get the same experience by putting on one of the Facebook's VR headsets, Quest. Great for when she flies the coop in the winter. Most important, I want to educate and I want more commerce. My wife and I sponsor the Baby's Heart Fund, a training program that teaches doctors how to do infant heart transplants. We've worked hard to try to pay tuition for doctors to learn how to do these transplants, but they obviously can't practice on real babies. In the metaverse, they can practice on virtual ones. I think it's going to be amazing. I envision learning Italian in the metaverse. I want to take the classes I never got around to take when I was younger from the best professors who ever lived without hurting my transcript. On the commerce side, we're talking about virtual malls where you can try things on a digital scan of your body and then get feedback from friends and family. It could be a small business bonanza with benefits from Facebook itself, I hope. I want to use this technology to experience concerts all over the world. Maybe learn how to fix a car, build a house, or use a crane, drive a truck, play a musical instrument, and not just be a hero playing the guitar. To make all of this happen, we need major players like Facebook to back software developers. They have to keep the prices low so that other companies have an incentive to participate, so creators have an incentive, because this will not work without literally, I think, millions of creators. It is that big, people. It is that big. Now, of all these markets, I'm sure that gaming is the biggest. We already have virtual reality games, but the technology's never really taken off. Oh, the metaverse is going to definitely change that. If Facebook can deliver just on that, and deliver on putting me in interactive game, maybe Red Dead Redemption, then I think you'll feel mighty silly for selling the stock right now in response to last night's, okay, less than stellar quarter, especially since it really wasn't even that bad. And I believe they can deliver. I know this metaverse stuff sounds ridiculously pie in the sky, but when so many major tech CEOs are telling the same story, I have to believe that it's the real deal. And so is Facebook stock. If on Thursday, Mark Zuckerberg really spells out what it would look, whether it's gaming, whether it's health, whether it's work, I don't know. But if he presents it right, then I think the stock's a buy and that you're going to want to be in it. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. The news with Shepard Smith starts now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.